it's offering like 30% APY and you're seeing like 18% of that return or 18% APY is sitting in EtherFi tokens. We got to restart this. I got to put this cat outside.
Meowing up a storm.
The cat thinks the valuation's too high.
Yeah.
Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. The Blockworks research team is back to bring you another episode of an analyst roundtable. Today is Monday, March 18th, and today we are joined by Ryan, a new face of the Blockworks research team, and 0x Pibbles. Ren, how about I kick it over to you to discuss some of the latest news and governance updates?
Definitely. Thank you, Sam. So for the first news and governance update, it's Zerion. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Zerion. Announces an L2. I'm not really sure what a wallet needs an L2 for, but apparently they're going to subsidize user transactions. I also don't think Zerion is like a that widely used as a wallet, but it seems like everyone's launching an L2, so I guess it'd be interesting to see a wallet sort of launch an L2 too. Sort of knee-jerk reaction is that a wallet does kind of have like a distribution in crypto because everyone interacts with crypto through a wallet. So, you know, if like MetaMask launched an L2, I think it would actually be pretty powerful. And you can think of, I guess, like Coinbase Wallet, they launch their own L2 base. So this might be a fun experiment, but yeah, we'll see. Another news and governance update is that Starbucks is shuttering their NFT Odyssey platform. It's going to close the last day of March. I think it was one of the relatively hype deals that occurred in the last bull market. I know there was a lot of like talk behind the scenes about like how much was really spent on that deal, and I do think it was quite a high sum. But yeah, NFT customers could earn through the Odyssey program, and then they could earn stamps. I know this was a crowd favorite for Sam. But yeah, these NFTs are now going to be transferred to the NFT platform Nifty Gateway, where they can continue to be bought and sold. I think it's a bit disappointing that they're shutting this down. I feel like it was a fun experiment, but I feel like we're gonna see a lot more of these like customer loyalty, fan engagement type of like NFT programs in the coming years. Any thoughts on those two news updates?
I feel kind of attacked here. I know Pibbles is a sucker for a Starbucks latte as well, so I'm definitely gonna call you out there too, Pibbles. But yeah, kind of disappointed in this one. Obviously, there just like wasn't very good traction. To be honest, the UX was like super clunky. Like the last thing I want to do is log into my website browser, check out my wallet on Polygon, and like trade these little stamp NFTs. So I definitely understand why they're shutting it down. There like wasn't product market fit there. Like the most you got was like a free coffee, and that took like a ton of stamps that you had to collect. I'm pretty sure I paid like $1,000 for one of these stamps too that are probably worth nothing now. But nevertheless, sad to see it. But at least they gave it the old college try, I guess.
The Odyssey was a lot of work too. Like it was like, watch this 2-hour documentary on the origin of our beans and then take a quiz about it to get a stamp. And like, you have to get a ton of stamps to get the slightest reward. So I quit after the first week.
Yeah, as did I.
I admit that I didn't use the product. I like logged in once. I think I became like a tiger or something, and then I immediately logged off. I think the takeaway for me though is that these like Web 2, Web 3 partnerships are really hard to pull off, especially on the consumer side. Like I think about like GameFi and DeFi, and the reason that they worked to any degree, I think, is that they were built by crypto native teams. And if you look at like early internet or early mobile apps, the really successful ones were all like the native teams, like early internet, Amazon, eBay, Yahoo, PayPal, right? Like banks could have easily entered payments, but they didn't. A net new startup had to like enter that marketplace. And same thing on mobile, like Instagram, WhatsApp, like Spotify, right? Like Apple was miles ahead of Spotify in terms of like music distribution and streaming, and they still lost out. They were beaten by like a mobile native startup. And and Starbucks just wasn't native enough, I think.
I do think that there's an opportunity to try this again, but maybe a few months down the road with like a much better user experience. I'm sure if we gave people like a free pumpkin spice latte and then they can create like a wallet through like ZK login instead of like creating their own wallet with like a 12-word seed phrase, like that'll probably be a much better user experience and make it like a Robinhood type interface, you know, like you like swipe to like sell your NFT. You don't need to like approve transactions and whatnot. But yeah, I guess good luck, Starbucks. A few other news and governance updates. The My Lady treasury was drained of 110 NFTs. As a result, the floor price, I think, is 20% lower than where it was before it was drained. Grab, which is sort of like Uber of Southeast Asia, allows for crypto on-ramp options now via AAA. You can use BTC, ETH, XSGD, USDC, and USDT. And I think that's like a pretty nice option for a lot of people, because a lot of the time, just the off-ramp process is quite a pain in the ass, to be honest. So just sending it to a product or service that you use commonly and being able to pay for that in crypto is a pretty big unlock. And another thing that occurs along that front is I think the Gnosis Pay cards are starting to go out. And so far, I've heard like relatively okay things about them. I know some people have mentioned like they're getting like really, really big slippage when they're transferring or swapping from like another sort of stable coin that's in another currency, but it'll probably take some time before those really take off. Polyhedra closed a $20 million strategic funding round at $1 billion. So this feels like another like really high valuation for sort of like middleware infrastructure. And I wouldn't be surprised just looking at the state of the market and where the wormhole airdrop is probably gonna launch at. But yeah, any thoughts on those three bullet points?
I got a question on Polyhedra. What even are they building exactly? It's like been too long. I'm almost afraid to ask at this point.
So Polyhedra's main product, if I'm not wrong, is ZK Bridge. And the ZK Bridge basically operates across multiple networks. And it's not just like one VM. It's across like EVM chains and also Bitcoin. So for example, I think they're going to leverage EigenLayer to sort of build out interoperability between Bitcoin and Ethereum, if I'm not wrong. But yeah, it's like ZK bridging. Think of it as like Wormhole is interested in like a ZK sort of like end game. So I think Polyhedra is like trying to work towards that right now, I guess. But yeah, ZK bridging is the TLDR. But all right, moving on to some last news and governance updates. 4844 was finally implemented. Congratulations, Ethereum, with pretty minimal hiccups outside of a slight uptick in missed slots and reorgs. And I think the cost of L2 transactions has dropped at least an order of magnitude across all rollups, which is pretty damn good, you know. I feel like it's always very, very impressive when Ethereum pulls off these like live upgrades, considering Ethereum's this massive network, it's a complicated system, and you're just upgrading it on the fly. It's like really, really impressive. Another news and governance update is that the AVO airdrop is underway. So if you have, go and claim your AVO tokens. And lastly, the BTC MicroStrategy pair trade. MicroStrategy has absolutely ran it up turbo in the last few weeks. So MicroStrategy is up while BTC was down, likely due to traders long BTC and shorting MicroStrategy, as market participants expected the premium applied to MicroStrategy would dissolve post ETF approval. But that just has not happened, as Michael Saylor announces private offering after private offering. It kind of feels like a infinite money glitch. I know it's not an infinite money glitch, but it kind of feels like an infinite money glitch. Any comments on those?
Yeah, I had Saylor on the cool throne last week. It's just pretty wild that he's able to run up the equity price and then do more, you know, convertible notes and essentially leverage that high equity value in order to basically finance more Bitcoin purchases. So good on him over there. In terms of 4844, my main takeaway is if you're not experimenting at the VM level as a rollup, then you need to start, if you're not like the Arbitrum or Optimisms of the world, because obviously they've established some type of network effect and community. But if you just look at raw performance, like we're still seeing fees at the L2 level grind higher just because of the constraints of the EVM at the execution layer and not necessarily the L1 settlement costs of these L2s. So very excited to see things like Monad, Eclipse. There's all sorts of other projects kind of experimenting a little bit in the VM space at the L2 level. So excited to watch this play out over this cycle. I think they'll be big winners.
Yeah, following on that, it feels like we've hit a point with Celestia and EigenDA probably coming online sometime later this year where perhaps DA isn't constrained for L2s anymore. It's execution. So it'll be interesting to see how L2 sort of like tackle that, especially considering that most L2s have like a centralized sequencer today. And it'll be interesting to see if they sort of like boost up the execution component of the L2. But all right, we're going to move on to our DYDX segment this week. And this week we have Skip Protocol. All right, guys, welcome to this week's DYDX segment. This week we have Mag, co-founder of Skip. Thank you so much for coming on, Mag.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
All right, so getting straight to it. Skip received a grant from DYDX to monitor and analyze sovereign MEV within the DYDX ecosystem. Could you talk a little bit more about the partnership and the efficacy of the order book discrepancy dashboard that you guys have built?
Yeah, sure. So I think a large part of it was just realizing like what is MEV on an order book, right? This was a question that I don't think anyone had really explored prior to us looking at it with DYDX research. And I think what we discovered was, you know, when you have a chain with multiple different validators, the difference in how those validators order their orders or how they process them is actually very indicative of how much MEV is being extracted. So this concept of order book discrepancy actually serves as a very good proxy for figuring out what MEV is. And the dashboard, you know, has been live for a while. And I think one really cool thing that we've noticed is validators have come to us asking us how to reduce their amount of order book discrepancy, which one, decreases MEV, but then two, just makes for a better trading experience. And it's come to the, you know, there have been a couple of cases where people exceeded the, you know, socially allowed amount of order book discrepancy, and those folks have taken extra measures to make sure they've reduced it. So at a minimum, it served as a great way of like making these metrics more transparent and for folks to realize how they're doing along these lines.
Okay, that's super interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that validators would come to you asking how to reduce their discrepancy, but that kind of makes sense, whether that's like malicious or not malicious. Another super exciting thing that you guys are working on is Slinky, which you guys announced earlier this year. Could you walk us through what that is and why it's so important?
Yeah, so we're big believers in building tooling that allows for sovereign chains to become more powerful. And Slinky is exactly that, right? So basically what Slinky allows you to do is to build your own restaked native oracle that uses your own validator set to run and retrieve your own oracle prices. It's also heavily geared towards performance. And so it can deliver, you know, upwards of 1,000 currency pairs on a per block basis with very little latency. And so in many ways, it was almost custom designed for DYDX. It was built with their needs in mind. And, you know, we're actively working with the DYDX team to explore, you know, whether it's a viable option to actually run the Oracle on DYDX. But at a minimum, what it should allow for is tons and tons of new permissionless markets in a much more verifiable and safe way. And so that's one thing that we're really excited to work on with DYDX is how do we get DYDX from, you know, 75 markets to over 10,000?
Yeah, that's super exciting. I think permissionless listings are a great thing. And I think reducing the sort of like trust assumptions that you need to have, for example, like most prop dexes, they need to have like another set of trust assumptions with the Oracle. And so just bringing that in-house and trusting the same validator set seems like a very natural thing to do. I think one last question I wanted to ask is, what's the update on the Block SDK? You guys released that a while back, and I was super interested in the entire concept of it. And it seems like Ethereum's like slowly trying to move in that direction. And so I wanted to ask, has anyone adopted it, and how are applications using it right now?
Yeah, so the Block SDK was a little bit of a departure from our normal way of building product. It's a fully open source SDK that allows for chains to, you know, split up their block into different lanes that have different ordering and execution rules. We've seen two chains adopt it. So Osmosis and Neutron are both, you know, shipping with the Block SDK in their most recent release or their next release. And the main use case we've seen for it right now is enabling free transactions. So basically having a dedicated amount of block space that is given to types of transactions and types of actors that should be the network wants to subsidize, right? We've also seen a lot of use for the MEV lane. So the concept of, you know, sovereign MEV or recapturing MEV profit for your community instead of letting it leak out of the system has been very popular. And the way that that's implemented in the block SDK is via top of block auction. So those two things have been very popular. I think the hub is right around the corner from launching with a block SDK to have an EIP-1559 fee market, which should, you know, reduce some of their congestion issues. And especially in periods of high load, makes it a lot harder to DOS the network.
Gotcha. That's super exciting to hear. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today, but thank you so much for coming on, Mag. And now, moving on to our Hot Seat Cool Drone segment. Moving on to this week's Hot Seat Cool Drone segment. 0x Pivots, I'm going to throw it over to you this week first.
Yeah, I'm going to start with a cool throne. It's EtherFi, which is liquid restaking. So I just wrote a report probably about a month ago on liquid staking for Ethereum and how it's a cash flow machine. And today was a good morning to wake up and see the EtherFi airdrop. They just raised like 35 mil a few weeks ago in their second round. And then they launched this EtherFi governance token at like a $4 billion valuation. I think it's like around 400 mil circulating market cap. But EtherFi has just been like a really great product to use over the past year for staking Ethereum, particularly because you get Eigenlayer points as well as EtherFi points, which have now converted to a token. They also launched a new, it's a new strategy. I think it's called Liquid, and it auto deploys your staked ETH in EtherFi into like various DeFi strategies. I think I saw a tweet that was like EtherFi's launch price today is like a 20,000x return for seed investors, which is pretty insane. They also launched a new like DeFi strategy today. So you can take your staked ETH in EtherFi and it will go into a vault and it auto deploys into various DeFi strategies like on Pendle. It's paying 30% APY, where 18% of that is more EtherFi tokens, and then 12% of that is like actual native ETH. And you continue to earn more EtherFi and Eigenlayer points. So it's kind of like a nice suite for like people who want Ethereum exposure but don't want to have to actively manage what they're actually doing with that.
Yeah, I feel like that felt very fast. I felt like I would have expected a lot of these like LRT protocols to sort of push out or like prolong the tokens as fast as possible. But I mean, like, if you're just looking at all of the valuations that a lot of these airdrops are launching at, and I feel like considering the amount of TVL in their protocol, they're probably thinking that you're not going to get much more like marginal TVL, even with like additional incentives or additional points or whatever. So you might as well just launch the points now and be sort of like the first LRT protocol with a live token, and everyone will look at that and then they'll probably go, okay, this is the only LRT protocol with a token. I'm going to ape it because this, I need like my LRT protocol like exposure. And so, yeah, I think overall it's a good move. It's interesting to see them launch that sort of like automated yield strategy. I think over the past year, we've seen protocols such as like Solmeteer do quite well with sort of like yield vault and yield management. So it'll be interesting to see how much people ape into the yield strategies. And I think it makes sense considering that you're depositing ETH into all of these protocols and Eigenlayer for yield anyway. That's kind of the whole premise, that you're providing security. And in return, you get like some tokens, which you can think of as yield. And so they might as well like manage that ETH or the ETH for you and sort of try to generate additional yield on top of it. I'll be really interested to see once Eigenlayer launches how these LRT protocols differentiate themselves. Will they have like a different basket of ABSs? Will they ultimately all have the same basket of ABSs, since there's probably like a socially like good basket version of ABS? Is like, it'll probably be obvious to most people like which ones are like BS and which ones are good. So it'll be interesting to see those dynamics play out and whether it'll be like a winner takes all market or there'll be, for example, like 10 LRT protocols 1 year from now.
I just pulled up the Lido chart, just kind of like looking at the market cap at $2.5 billion versus EtherFi's $4 billion. Pibbles, would you say this is like under or overvalued if you had to put a rating on it?
EtherFi probably overvalued, but I mean, fair. It just depends. Like Ren said, with like the AVS strategy. So like obviously this like liquid strategy vault they just launched, it kind of lays like the preliminary architecture for a managed AVS vault where you just deposit your ETH to be restaked. And then they kind of like auto pick depending on like your risk tolerance on like what AVSs you want to help direct your ETH to secure.
On a similar note for liquid restaking, I'll talk a little bit about one of my hot seat coupons then. Swell, which is another liquid restaking protocol, they have around 840 million in TVL, and they both have a liquid staking token and a liquid restaking token. So between those two in total, they have around 1 billion in TVL. Rather than launching a token, they've decided to launch a restaked rollup. So like everyone else, it's rollup season, and I think this just keeps on happening as much as our friend and analyst Dan Smith is so sick of L2s launching again and again. But yeah, this restaked rollup has a few benefits, which I think this part is like relatively interesting for what it's worth. Since it's a restaked rollup and they, I guess, will be able to provide like several, I'm not sure if AVS is the right term here, but several like features within their restaked rollup. So for example, decentralized sequencing, decentralized verification, and using sort of EigenLayer for a fast finality layer. I think it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. I feel like all three of these are a little bit of like buzzwords that we haven't seen go live into production yet. Although I know Near has like a fast finality layer. But yeah, I mean, if you just think about it from like a logical perspective, if Blast was the L2 that's built for like native staking yield, then the obvious evolution of that was that there was going to be an L2 built with native restaking yield. I think it's really obvious that that would have happened sooner or later. I wouldn't be too surprised to see Blast like eventually incorporate LRTs of some sort down the road once it's sort of like a bit more established. But yeah, I think Swell has mentioned that they're going to have all of like the familiar DeFi primitives, but they're probably also going to have primitives built on native staking and restaking yield. And the native gas token of their chain will be RSWETH, which is their liquid restaking token, not their liquid staking token. And I feel like that was a relatively interesting choice, to be honest, because their liquid staking token has a TVL of 840 million versus their liquid restaking token of that has a TVL of roughly 150 million. So it could be a bid to sort of increase the TVL of the liquid restaking token, increase the adoption and sort of its utility around its own DeFi ecosystem. But I'll be really interested to see what type of dApps launch there, to be honest. I'm struggling beyond like the normal, like, you know, DEXs, money markets, maybe like a perp DEX with liquid restaking token as collateral. But yeah. Let's just see how this experiment plays out. And it's going to use EigenDA and it's going to be built using the Polygon ZK-EVM.
Yeah, I can't wait to farm the Swell Swap airdrop in Swelland. It's going to be good stuff. It's cool to see them launch this L2 strategy along with everyone else. And I know like EtherFi also put an L2 in their roadmap. I think it's pretty safe to say Blockworks Research is going to have its own L2. By the end of the year, just for fun.
I think going completely off topic here, but another thing that you're seeing or you're starting to see is L2s, not just on Ethereum, like on Solana too. And I feel like just L2 season is going to get sillier and sillier. Like everyone, even if it doesn't make sense, is just going to launch an L2. I think by the end of the year, Mert's probably going to get brain damage of some form if he already doesn't have brain damage from all of the L2s that have launched. But for example, Zeta Markets is launching its own L2 on Solana. Grass is launching its own L2 on Solana. I think you can make an argument for like those two, like kind of make sense. But, you know, on the other hand, you've also seen people sort of take the SVM and build out their own kind of L1. So for example, like Piff. Piff has their own network built using the SVM. So it's interesting to see that choice between L2s and L1. And I don't think we have a lot of Solana L2s today, if any, at all. So it'll be interesting to see
what that user experience looks like compared to sort of like Ethereum L2s.
Yeah, I think the biggest question here is, do they actually work? Like if you're seeing like tons of transactions getting dropped on Solana in every block right now, what happens when you're an L2 on Solana and you're trying to like just function as a chain?
Yeah, I got to go back and like study up on this, but I feel like I've like seen Anatoly say multiple times, like, I don't know why you would build an L2 on Solana. Like you don't, like you wouldn't get any benefits per se, but yeah, I don't have enough knowledge on why you would need to build a Solana L2 to actually have like an intelligent take here, to be honest.
I think the reason stated for at least the grass L2 is that the amount of data or transactions they will need to process in order to support the entire like decentralized AI like information gathering stack is just orders of magnitudes larger than whatever like Solana is able to support today. And so that's the reason they need an L2. Because I mean, like, sure, Solana's like throughput is pretty good today. If off the top of my head, just trying to think of like the TPS, the non-vote TPSs, it's probably around like, I want to say 800 to 1,000. And I can definitely see like there's some crazy use cases out there which require a much higher TPS than that. But yeah, that sort of set of protocols or applications that really need that level of like performance and throughput is probably very, very limited. And I know there's like a number that's thrown out there in terms of Solana's like DA capacity. And I know that number is wrong, but I think the number that's thrown around was like 150 MB per second, but I know that specifically refers to like something else. So realistically, it's probably a lot lower than that. But yeah, like DA probably definitely is not the constraint for Solana L2s. It's probably going to be execution too.
Roping this back into Swell too, like what is the difference between EtherFi and Swell? Are they more or less competing within the same vertical, would you guys say?
Yeah, I think they're like basically the same. The only difference right now is like EtherFi already uses OBOL to implement like DVT. I'm not sure if Swell has something like that.
Gotcha. Well, I can take it over with my cool throne this week. I've got Shuffle. It just concluded its LBP. It launched with about $10 million of liquidity paired with USDC on Ethereum mainnet. Shuffle is a gambling application that supports like casino-like games like slots and craps, blackjack, etc., as well as a sports book for things like college basketball, NFL, NBA, etc., all the sports you'd expect to see on a traditional book. It launched at a $35 million market cap or roughly $600 million FDV. Apparently, a jump tagged address participated in the LBP and deposited $1 million into there. So they're basically running, in my eyes, the DYDX playbook, kind of like a low float, high FDV in order to keep the value of incentives really high and keep volume coming back and trading for more to get those incentives. And I view that as kind of attractive in relation to other GambleFi projects that we've seen in the past. It's either been, yes, they have a token to use for incentivization, but they kind of have that cold start problem and can't really get the volume and the incentives value therefore suffer. And then with Rollbit, we saw them obviously explode around 6 to 12 months ago, but they do not really have a token that they can use to incentivize. So I've been looking for a project like this, and I feel like Shuffle checks a lot of the boxes. They did about $150 million of volume the other day. This is likely inflated due to the airdrop occurring, but nonetheless, $150 million of volume is a lot. I also like the way they designed their airdrop. So basically, if you bet on the platform between February 2023 and February 2024, you got an airdrop based on the amount of volume that you actually betted. But what I liked about this is that 20% was available on TGE, but then the remaining 80% vests over 3 months, with the exception that if you bet more volume, then your airdrop vest is expedited. And you can actually use the Shuffle tokens to bet on the platform. which in my opinion just ultimately means that people who received an airdrop will likely gamble it away as opposed to selling it on DEXs, because gamblers like to gamble. 15% of the non-shuffle denominated revenue will be used to buy back and burn the token, and 30% of the shuffle denominated revenue will also be used to buy back and burn the token. So just running some back of napkin numbers, if you assume like a 5% or even a 1% margin on the 150 mil volume, that'd be, you know, $7 million of revenue in 7 days. So I think people are underestimating the amount of buybacks and burns. This hasn't actually taken place yet. I checked the burn address this morning, but I think that we will see people threading about this one in the coming weeks. Could definitely be wrong, not financial advice, but I've just been looking for a GambleFi project because I find the product market fit with crypto to be absolutely perfect, and just no one's kind of nailed this on the head yet. But curious if you guys have any thoughts.
I think it's looking pretty healthy, strong on-chain liquidity. This is my first time looking at the chart. Disgustingly low float. Like, I think this is a banger play. I would like to buy this security.
I got a quick question. You mentioned that 20% is available post TGE and 80% investing then in the over 3 months. For the speeding up part, is it only with volume that you wager like post TGE, or is it like looking at the volume that you had pre TGE?
Yeah, just post TGE volume. So you're kind of incentivized to bet more in order to get your tokens. You probably lose, you get your tokens. You're like, all right, I'm going to make it all back in one bet. And then you lose that. Then all of a sudden shuffle tokens are getting burned. That's kind of the thesis in a nutshell.
Gotcha. And then is it like it accelerates the burn based on like, it accelerates the vesting based on like tiers. If you bet more than like $10,000, it like vests like 2 weeks earlier. If you bet more than $100,000, it vests like 1 month earlier. Like, what does it look like?
It's something like that. I'll be honest. Gotcha. I haven't looked into it because I didn't personally get the airdrop, because this is like, they're very, very strict on their terms of services. Like, they will kick you off of the platform if you bet more than like $500. So that's another reason why I'm actually kind of bullish on this project. Like, it seems like they are actually following the rules, unlike a lot of other, you know, competitors. So I would just like to see a well-run and actually compliant gambling platform that integrates crypto, and Shuffle seems to be the number one contender there. I also believe the founder's brother is the founder of Monad. I'm pretty sure. I don't think I'm messing that up, but that's like kind of another good sign. You know, this guy's well-connected and knows what he's doing in the crypto space.
Gotcha. And I don't gamble at all, so I'm going to have a lot of questions. One more question I want to ask is, you mentioned that you can wager, I gamble, but I don't do like gambling in terms of like shuffle type gambling. Let me clarify that. You mentioned that you can use shuffle to wager. So for example, like, I don't know, you want to bet on like yesterday's like FA Cup match between Man U and Liverpool. Are there two separate pools there? Like, one is like a shuffle denominated like order book, and there's another like USDT denominated order book, or like, what does that look like specifically? Or is it just like using shuffle as a collateral?
You would use shuffle as the collateral, and all the bets are denominated in USD. So I'm not sure how that actually operates under the hood. I'll be completely honest, there's a good bit of opacity in the design of shuffle. Like, that's another one of the main tips with Rollbit. It's like, we can't actually see what's going on here. They're supposed to be releasing an analytics dashboard that gives more insights into the specific types of wager volume, revenue, burn, et cetera, things like that. So definitely looking forward to that. But in terms of how it works on the back end, like, it does give me Mango like vibes, like letting people, you know, bet on your platform with the native token. So not sure how they actually translate that into dollars on the back end, whether they sell the tokens for dollars right when they receive them, because there is like a deposit and withdrawal. Like, you can deposit from any chain. You can be on Solana, you can be on Ethereum, et cetera, just deposit into the platform, and then you have a dollar balance. But that dollar balance does fluctuate while it's in the platform as well. So not sure if they're like transferring it to dollars and then not taking on the price volatility, or if they're actually holding the underlying assets and wallet addresses. I would assume the latter, but not 100% sure. Sorry, Ren.
Yeah, no worries. And I think another interesting point that you mentioned was that they are like mostly following the rules, and they're, for example, like limiting the amount that you can deposit or wager, I think, is you mentioned. I think that might be like a really good thing, obviously, both from like a regulatory standpoint, they have to follow the regulations, but also for their market makers, if that's the correct term, for like a gambling protocol. Because if you think about it, like, you kind of don't want adverse selection. You don't want to be the market maker on the opposite side of like someone being 100x long whiff on Robit. Like, that would be a pretty disastrous outcome. But if you limit like the size to like $500, then I think it's safe to say like chances are you're getting like pretty silly retail flow rather than like super giga chad like whale flow. And so that's probably like another reason that will help sort of like accelerate the flywheel between like volume, liquidity, and activity.
Yeah, I guess it's worth noting too that like obviously there's quite a bit of inflation from airdrop one. There's going to be multiple airdrops coming in the future. The vests and cliffs are like relatively short. So the question is kind of going to become like, is the amount of revenue they're bringing in offsetting the inflation? I don't know if it really matters because we're in a bit of a bull market right now and all it takes is like a narrative to start up. But there's definitely like some question marks given the high inflation early on.
Yeah, I think on the market making point, like if someone just wins too much, you just don't let them withdraw. That seems to work. It's a pretty good strategy in crypto.
Yeah, their terms of services definitely says like we reserve the right to just rug you essentially. So I wouldn't try like going on there with significant sums of money. It's more of something that you should test out and have fun with just as a casual hobby.
I have a question for you guys. Do you think like gambling protocols, gambling in terms of like you can do like sports betting, blackjack, poker, like that type of gambling, do you think that takes a backseat in the bull market just given like sort of on-chain like meme coin activities? Or do you think, I'm not sure if this is the correct metric, but like gambling market share increases versus like meme coin volume, I guess? Because I feel like I could see it both ways, to be honest. On one hand, I feel like, you know, like if it's a complete like bull market, you're getting like these like 100x's every day on Solana. Like maybe I don't want to like do sports betting and gambling and like play poker on chain. Instead, I want to go like eat all of these meme coins. But I could also see just like overall degenerate activity increasing in a bull market.
Yeah, my guess would be meme coin volume maintains its dominance over traditional gambling volume by quite a mile, to be honest. But I think it's two separate cohorts of users. Like if you're using Shuffle, you can hardly even tell that you're using crypto at all. Really, the only crypto component is depositing assets. And I think that giving like kind of a universal, like global system where you can deposit from any chain and have like a clean front end for gambling, I think that has like an actual chance to onboard new users as opposed to just the same people playing musical chairs on Solana today and meme coins.
I think it's a perfect spot to pass it off to Ryan for his hot seat or Cruz Jones, because I know it has something to do with meme coins.
Totally. Yeah. So my cool throne is meme coin legitimacy. So we all know that as meme coins are becoming the bulk of crypto market activity today, we're actually seeing the market, investors, traditional finance even, begin to intellectualize and legitimize meme coin trading and this behavior. We've seen Bowdoin and Trump being framed as continuous prediction markets, which is a metaphor that I love. We're seeing with Pepe Bonk being referred to as cultural spot assets by VCs. And we're seeing even protocols like Bonk, a meme with a team and BonkBot actually generate real revenues. I think it was over 120 million in trading volume and generated 700,000 in revenue yesterday, or 1.1 million in revenue yesterday. Just from trading fees. That's like fundamentals, right? This activity is being legitimized. You're seeing the VC think pieces come out. I even saw on Twitter yesterday a legal argument for the legitimacy of meme coins, right? That the teams that make these, like, they don't stick around. There is no team. The thing has no utility, so it can't be a security, right? So it's completely legitimized. I'm not a legal expert. Don't take my legal advice. It's just a tweet I saw. And what's interesting is that, like, potential hot seat, when we start to legitimize these things, when we start saying that, you know, DeFi is the future of finance or GameFi is the future of gaming, kind of a top signal. So my cool throne is meme coin legitimacy, but it could very well also be a hot seat as well.
Yeah, I think meme coins right now, it's like making me increasingly more uncomfortable in holding anything besides Bitcoin, because it's the only one with like true institutional flows. Like, if meme coins keep blowing up like this, then you're kind of like creating a horrible image for crypto. Like, we just beat out the criminal image and like the money laundering image. And it's like, okay, we are just a giant casino. It makes me want to distance myself from that entire sector and like just hold Bitcoin, because this is definitely not helping us in the public eye at all.
I don't know. I feel like, okay, sure, like gambling and being a degenerate like probably isn't that good for the public image, but I feel like a lot of like society at large just like to speculate on like the most stupid or ridiculous things. Sure, like maybe we shouldn't be speculating on like which dog is the best, or I feel like people definitely want to speculate on, for example, like who's gonna win the presidential election. But for example, if you made a meme coin for every single like boyfriend that Taylor Swift has had and gave that to like the Taylor Swift crowd to speculate on, I bet you that would probably, like, assuming like you abstract away all of the complexities of like interacting with crypto, like that would do an insane amount of numbers, like every time Taylor Swift switches a boyfriend. But yeah, I don't think I'll go so far to say like, you know, like meme coin super cycle, but I do think that there's like a long-term trend and narrative there, both in terms of like just society at large wanting to be degenerate. You see that in like increased gambling volume like year over year. I think this year was like the largest like betting volume for Super Bowl like ever by a wide margin. Gambling as an industry has like a 20% like year-on-year growth rate. The amount of volume traded in zero data expiry options, which I think is mostly driven by retail, also has exploded in the past few years. And I think those are like long-term trends that just continue to hold. And as Ryan mentioned, you know, rather than trying to speculate on that in like a prediction market where right now, if you bet on Polymarket, the best you walk away with is like a 2x after the election happens, you might as well just go ape into like Trump or like Biden, you know, because there's that continuous element to it. It'll probably still trade after the election happens. For example, all the way into like the 4-year terms of these, like the new president, but also like the upside is quote unquote unlimited. So I do think there's something to be said for like the long-term staying power of like maybe not meme coins in terms of like dogs and cats, but like meme coins that like represent certain cultural events, for lack of a better term.
I don't know. I'd take Pibbles' side on this one. I see like just new meme coins with hundreds of million dollars of volume, and they accrue these ridiculous FTVs or market caps, and it gives people this false sense of wealth, when in reality, it's only a handful of people who can actually cash out given the amount of liquidity on the asset that they're trading. So it makes me feel like it's incredibly frothy, and it scares me this early in a bull market, as if like we need to reset back down to like 55-60k Bitcoin, somewhere around there. But it's just a game of musical chairs. I just think people need to be aware of the game that they're playing, because I think a lot of people have made a ton of money on these meme coins and they're still sitting in them. And once the music stops, like the liquidity dries up pretty quick and those paper gains can run away in a hurry. So makes me nervous too, Pibbles.
Yeah. And people will say like, oh, crypto has found like PMF, but I think we live in a vacuum. And I think we're spending like 8 hours a day subconsciously on crypto Twitter. And we're like, oh, this is the future. Like everyone's doing it. What if no one outside of crypto is touching these? Because who has that much money in crypto to throw $5,000 at a meme coin besides us? Like, I think we're just getting really detached from reality here. And like, it's blatantly obvious, but everyone's going to continue to ignore it.
So you're telling me that people sending pre-sale Sol to random addresses isn't a top signal? I mean, come on. We saw, what, $30 million sent to, like, random addresses? Is this Boehm? I actually have not even caught up on the Boehm stuff. So if anyone can shed some light on what happened there, that'd be great, too.
Yeah, I can shed some light on sort of, like, the pre-sale situation. That's my hot seat for this week. So Boehm is... I don't even know what it is. Basically, it stands for, like, Book of Meme. It was created by this Twitter account called Dark Farms, and they're known for, like, the Pepe meme. But yeah, people sent, I don't have the numbers here, but they send, like, a lot of money to this guy. And basically, it has a ridiculous amount of liquidity. Just looking at it right now, it has $66 million of liquidity, and that trumps, like, most assets. On Solana, at some point it traded at roughly like a 2 billion FTV, and it went from 0 to 2 billion in like 3 days. I think it's one of the crazier, if not the craziest things that probably a lot of us have seen in crypto in a very, very long time or ever. And that was like just the start. As soon as like that overnight success occurred, I think you saw over $100 million sent to various pre-sales in the last 48 hours. And basically how it works is like some KOL, some influencer on Twitter mentions that they're doing a pre-sale. It's a minimum of like one Sol. Sometimes there's a maximum, for example, of like 3 Sol. You send it to this address and then all of that Sol is used for liquidity. You get like a percentage allocation of the initial token supply. Most of the time it's like 50% is given to people who like bought into the pre-sale. The other 50% is deposited into the liquidity pool. And most of these people burn the liquidity. But yeah, I feel like it's gotten pretty crazy. I think the craziest example I saw on my timeline was some person raising $30 million in 30 minutes. And sometimes you think to yourself, like, how did these people just have so much money that's sitting around and they're just waiting to just give it to like a random person in hopes that they don't get completely rugged? And another example of this, another example of getting rugged is this token called Slurf, S-Slurf. I don't know how to pronounce it, but they raised $10 million. They burned the LP, but they also burned the tokens that were set aside for the pre-sale allocation. And this guy basically revoked the mint authority. So there's nothing he can do, like quite literally nothing he can do. It's just like a big oopsies. And $10 million in Sol is just now gone forever. I feel like there's some legal liability there for whoever did this, but yeah, it definitely feels toppy when $100 million in Sol has been sent to random Twitter accounts in the past 48 hours. I'm not sure how you don't look at that and like, how you look at that and don't think it feels like a little toppy and a little frothy in the markets right now.
It certainly feels toppy. But let's fast forward 4 years to the next cycle. Is meme coin activity larger than it is today or smaller than it is today?
I would take today, I would say larger. I feel like every cycle, it just gets larger. It probably increases like by less orders of magnitudes every cycle. But if you look at like Doge, it hit 80 billion market cap last cycle and SHIB was like a fraction of that. I don't think it's too crazy to like CSGO like 1x or like, 2x like higher than that, what we did last cycle, just looking at the state of the market right now.
But when you multiply the number of coins just naturally, like the volume and market caps of these coins tends to go up. So it's a bit like people taking NFTs and being like, oh, the floor price is one. You got a collection of 10,000. The market cap is one ETH 10,000 in the collection. It's like, okay, yes, that's the market cap, but is there really 10,000 ETH worth of liquidity on the other side of that trade? Like, probably not.
I think, I don't know if this is like the right way of thinking about it, but yeah, obviously a lot of people are sitting on like paper gains of like 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, whatever in their like wallets. But one way I like to look at a lot of these meme coins is just look at the liquidity. And then if you divide it by like half So say like a meme coin has like 50 billion in liquidity. And then if you take half of that, that's like 25 million in liquidity. 25 million of like SOL or like USDC. And then the other 25 million is like the meme coin itself. And that's like how much money people have spent buying that meme coin, you know, rather than like these like sort of like artificial paper gains. And I'll be quite curious to see what the total amount of like liquidity divided by two for all of these Solana meme coins is, because sometimes it doesn't take that much like net dollars spent buying to like push these meme coins to like ridiculous like proportions. For example, if you look at like WIF, it has like $21.1 million in liquidity. So just from like a number standpoint, it's $21.1 million in the largest pool. So just from like a number standpoint, like only 10.5 million SOL has been spent in like net buying pressure on WIF. And that's not that much, to be honest, from my point of view, like in the grand scheme of things, considering like 100 million has been sent to Solana meme coin pre-sales in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, the thing is, you don't need a lot of new capital to really make market cap accelerate. Like, I know that there's a pretty tried and true paper in TradFi that shows that for every $1 in ETF inflows you get a $3 to $5 increase in market cap. I imagine it's way higher, you know, with these small cap coins. And it doesn't take a lot of new people playing the game to really push these things, especially when they're price insensitive.
But yeah, I know there's like a lot of like meme coin boo posting on the timeline. I feel like Andrew Kang is probably one of like the larger meme coin boo posters. And I think his prediction is like WIF and like one or two of like the presidential coins like ends up in the top 10. And I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility, just because like this election feels really contested. And you know, like it's sort of like interesting to think about the dynamics. You know, there's like MAGA / Trump on like Ethereum, and then now there's like Trump and Biden on Solana, but there's also like the OG Biden on Ethereum, but that has like a super duper small like market cap / FTV. So I'll be really interested to see like how these tokens trade after the election. You know, does Biden do well only when like Biden says like something stupid? Or for example, like how would these tokens trade after the presidential elections, assuming they all don't just like go to zero straight away?
It's also like a non-zero probability that Donald Trump references his meme coin. Like that'll be a big moment for crypto markets. The all-in guys are already referencing their meme coin, you know, telling people not to buy it, but at the same time, like accidentally legitimizing it just by, you know, putting it in front of people and getting people's attention. I think that, you know, a celebrity sees a meme coin of their name or image or likeness trading, just their nod to it on a social platform. I mean, that's potentially new users into the space. It's kind of the Trojan. It could be a Trojan horse for crypto adoption in some sense.
It cuts both ways, though. You know, someone sees it, they condoned it or didn't condone it, they shed more light on it, they buy it, and then it goes to zero. It's like kind of goes back to what Pibbles was saying. It's like this kind of, it's like two steps forward or one step forward, two steps back. Like, yeah, maybe you get a marginal user onboarded, but is it really for the better? Like, I just worry that people don't know the games they're playing, essentially. All right, well, that's a depressing note to end on. But Ryan, Pibbles, thanks for joining 0x. We will see you guys here next week.